Welcome to Fine Tuning with Drew Taylor, your one-stop shop when it comes to animation news and commentary. I'm Drew's co-host, entertainment writer Jim Hill, and he and I are recording this show on Friday, April 2nd, 2021. It's the day after April Fool's, Drew. A holiday I don't care for much. It's when the professionally unfunny do elaborate crap to pretend, look how witty I am. But no fooling, you came across some big news that is not an April Fool prank, right?
It is not an April Fool prank. I mean, it's kind of a April Fool prank on all of us that bought Raya and the Last Dragon on Disney Plus, in a way.
Okay.
Because today, out of the blue, seemingly, they released Raya and the Last Dragon and the short film on digital platforms today. So
wait a minute. This includes the short?
It includes the short, and it includes a bunch of deleted scenes and special features, including one that was shared on Slash Film that appears to be a version from before the big director switchover. So this is her as a protector. She's got her magic sword. It's all the stuff that kind of fell away when they had their big conversion sometime in 2019.
Holy
so,
cow.
Yeah, it does suck because I'm sure, like, you and I paid for $30 for it just on Disney Plus, but you can get it right now on Movies Anywhere and watch it on Vudu and YouTube and everything else. So it's sort of disappointing that they did this and didn't tell anybody about it, but hey, that's what it is, I guess, right?
Okay. And speaking of stuff that we think might actually be popping up in front of Raya being shown theatrically in theaters, you came across a short today as well?
Yes, there is a Hotel Transylvania short, a new Hotel Transylvania short called Monster Pets, which is just called Monster Pets, a Hotel Transylvania short, and it says in theaters this weekend in Cinemarks. So if you go to Cinemark this weekend and you see Raya, let us know if you saw Monster Pets before that, as we patiently await getting to see that. But, you know, it made me think because Gendy is a credited executive producer on this short. And it made me think of last year, Jim, when we didn't get to watch a new episode of Primal on Adult Swim on April Fool's. But what did they do this year?
On March 31st, at the stroke of midnight, Adult Swim went from being Adult Swim to Adult Swim Junior, with the notion that they changed over their entire channel for small children. And suddenly a credit sequence for Rick and Morty Babies ran. And it's the Rick and Morty opening, we all know, only with Rick and Morty as infants. And then they ran Total Recall, the fourth episode from season two, but it had been entirely redubbed in children's voices, which I got to make some time to find today. I guess there was a trailer posted on Twitter where they, for Adult Swim Jr., where they had Aqua Teen Hunger Force, The Boondocks, and Harvey Birdman, Attorney at Law. And my daughter evidently particularly fell in love with Meat Wad with a toddler's voice. So got to check this out. Also, we should remind folks that the fifth season of Rick and Morty is going to debut on the Really for Real Adult Swim Sunday, June 20th.
Did you watch Solar Opposites?
I have the best of intention. I promise I will do the Solar Opposites thing. But, you know, that'll be over the course of the rest of the weekend. And at some point this weekend, I'll also have to make time to watch the new Space Jam, A New Legacy trailer, which HBO and Warner's has been telling folks it's going to drop tomorrow at 9 a.m. Pacific time. That's 12 noon here and on the East Coast. And are you more intrigued now that, I guess earlier this week, they released that suite of eight posters?
Posters were terrible. I don't know who did that. I don't know. It was terrible. I thought the characters in shadow was such an ugly look. I thought the kind of gradation was all off. Yeah. Not feeling great about this, Jim. Hopefully the trailer will put me in my place.
Okay. Well, on the other hand, we did also have this week the Really For Real trailer for Mitchells versus the Machine dropped. What did you think of that?
Well, I told everybody not to watch it because it gives away some really good stuff. Mm-hmm. So did you watch it?
I did. Okay. I very much looking forward to it now that the world and the conceit is laid out there. But you've been lucky enough to see the whole film. Does it give away too much?
Yes, it does. It gives away some surprises. It doesn't give away sort of the broad strokes. Mm-hmm. But I think if you watch it, there's a scene in a mall. That's all mm-hmm. I'll say, which okay. I think should have been kept out of the. I understand why they did it. But when I saw it a little while ago, I wrote probably in all caps, Jim, do not give away the mall scene in the trailer. And of course, here we are. But, these things are out of my control, Jim.
That's the thing. The marketing department is always an interesting bunch of people. They don't much care what they give away as long as people turn out to watch the film, whatever gets you there. And now, again, this is going to debut on Netflix on Friday, April 30th. Mind you, the day before that, Thursday, April 29th, we get our next batch of Looney Tunes cartoons over at HBO Max. This is set number 4, really?
Wow.
Yeah. The first set dropped back in April of last year, 10 cartoons. We then got set number 2 more than 7 months, 8 months later in January of 2021. There was a set before that dropped in December. But what they did, they decided to do at HBO Max is they sort of glommed them all together, and they then became known as the Bugs Bunny 24-carat holiday special. Did you catch that at all?
Yeah, I loved that. Did you love it?
I did not see it. Now I got to go take a look at it. Now, as long as we're talking about new seasons of stuff coming, and as you're marking up your cartoon calendar here, April 5th, we have the season 2 of Mirror Royal Detective. It debuts over Disney Junior. They have brand new episodes every Monday for 8 weeks thereafter, with an episode highlighting Eid el-Fitr. By the way, that's the festival of breaking the fast. That's the marking the end of Ramadan. So kind of intriguing that Disney opted to go that route with the show. But yeah, that debuts on May 30th, out ahead of the actual Festival of the Breaking of the Fast, which starts on Wednesday, May 12th, and ends on Thursday, May 13th. And then I know this is a big part of your schedule, Drew, but of course, the season 2 of My Little Pony, Pony Life, debuts on Discovery Family. There were a couple of Comic Cons I went to years past, and it was always interesting to run into the bronies. But did you see, you were pretty much on the money in regard to the reaction to Comic Con Special Edition?
Oh, yeah. I was not alone, Jim, in my outrage. Yeah. Well, did you see the thing where they were saying that, talent doesn't want to do anything?
Yeah. I mean, the folks at Comic Con International released an additional statement, explained their position about this was the only time that was available, and there were other cons around the country that have used the same date, but I think somebody was pointing out that in years past they've done this in New York, but it's like, well, yeah, because you could get on the subway, go to the con for the day, and still be home with the family.
Right.
That's not an option with this one. So we were just talking about how season 2 of Mirror Royal Detective and My Little Pony, Pony Life, kind of sad to learn that one series is only going to get 2 seasons, and that's Bless the Hearts.
It's a charming show.
It is. It is. It debuted as part of Fox's Animation Domination Block back in September of 2019. And the timing of this cancellation, I mean, the news broke this afternoon, is a little weird because Tuesday of this week, we learned about the launch of 20th Century
Television
Animation. Yeah. Do you want to talk about that or?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's just really interesting because it's being run by Marcy Proletto. Let's say that's her name. Yeah.
Yep.
And she's been hired to run this new unit, and they've described it as being a development hub for quote unquote dozens of adult skewering animated shows. And but what's funny is one of the examples they give is Bless the Hearts.
Well, that's what I mean. I mean, literally, here's this announcement from Tuesday about here's these 11 shows that we're working on and that we already have up and running, and we have dozens more in development. And then right after that, and we're shutting this one down.
But I mean, the portfolio is amazing. I mean, it includes The Simpsons, Family Guy, Bob's Burgers, and Central Park, our favorite. Hello, there Ava. And also, they are working on projects for Apple TV Plus, HBO Max, all of these different streamers. So it's not purely a conduit for Disney Plus or Hulu projects. Although, as I just mentioned, Solar Opposites, which we have heard already, is renewed for a third season as part of this as well. So.
Marcy looks like she is the right person for the job. There's the story here as part of the thing in the trades that I guess her first job out of college was she was the assistant to the head of production on The Simpsons. You joined the show in its sixth season and has since worked on every other Fox animated property. Her resume at this point, she has worked on over 2,400 episodes of animation on 22 different shows. So it's like, probably the right person to be riding herd on this effort.
Yes.
20th Century Television Animation is going to have some competition, like Stupid Buddy Studios. And speaking of Stupid Buddy, have you heard about the show Ultra City Smiths, the thing they're doing for AMC? It's only a 6-episode order, but the gimmick of it is it's a kind of a noir, a murder mystery, only the difference is the characters in the show will all have doll heads.
Okay.
It's already got a killer voice cast. John C. Reilly, B.B. Newirth, Kurtwood Smith. We don't have a launch time yet. Basically, they've alluded to it will drop sometime this summer, but they haven't locked when. Kind of unexpected. Murder mystery with doll heads. But I'm there. It's Stupid Buddies. I'm there. Speaking of unexpected, and in relation to a company that does stop motion. What was your take this week with the Leica news?
Well, the Leica news that they're going to be moving into live action with an upcoming novel called 17 by John Brownlow, which was described as a YA novel in some reporting. Did you see that?
And Yeah,
it's very weird. But I also pointed out to you that it's not a Travis Knight movie either. They're just developing it. I guess it could be.
Okay.
But he's developing the $6 billion man for Warner Brothers right now. But when we were talking about this earlier in the week when it broke, we were talking about how they kind of had to do it, right? Mm-hmm. Because they haven't really had a huge hit.
And also, it's not like there's a certain animation company that did the exact same thing, that, you know, Walt Disney. People forget that December of 37, he puts out Snow White, and it's 8 years later after being predominantly the studio that did only animation. I mean, if you want to talk about the live action scenes and that sort of stuff for like Three Caballeros or that sort of thing. But it was only December 46, I want to say, or November, where we got Song of the South, where you see a Disney start to lean more toward live action because, frankly, it's easier to make those movies. You can get them out faster. And I think jump ahead to 49 with Treasure Island was the first really for real full-length live-action film without any animation in it. So Leica, who did strictly animation for 10 years and I want to say 5 months or thereabouts between Coraline and Missing Link, actually hung in there longer than Walt. So, and again, there's no shame in doing this. You work that hard, you work that long, and for them to also get into the YA field, I mean, between The Hunger Games and Twilight, there's a lot of money you can make off of being in the young adult field. So we'll see.
Well, I mean, I remember I was at Leica for a press day for Box Trolls when they were still in production. And I remember we had a lunch where it was just a very casual lunch, but Travis was there. Mm-hmm. And I just sort of point blank asked him, how long can you keep doing this? Because these movies are expensive and they don't really make any money. And, you know, he kind of hemmed and hawed and said, we don't have that big a footprint. We don't have that big of a staff. You know, it's not a huge expenditure, but you can only do this for so long without a kind of, like, imagine if Pixar didn't hit their stride until five movies in or something, you know, it's, I understand the need to diversify is what I'm saying.
I get that. But at the same time, you look at things like Kubo and the Two Strings and wonderful, amazing film. Nobody does stop motion like that. So yes. As long as we're talking about stop motion, I want to ask how many people out there have seen Vincent, the stop motion short that Disney put out back in October of 1982, the black and white film about the little boy who dreamed he was Vincent Price. You have undoubtedly seen this, Drew, right?
Oh, I love it. Yes, yeah. I watched it at the MoMA retrospective. I'm looking to see if it doesn't look like it's on Disney Plus, but it should be.
I totally agree. But this short, it launched not only Tim Burton's career, but also started Vincent Price's association with the Walt Disney Company, which Drew, by the way, pointed out was a little broader than I remembered. So I'll tell you what, folks, we're going to take a quick commercial break and we'll expand on what Drew pointed out.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Before we get started on the feature, Drew and I have been pretty point blank about the fact that we are big fans of Gennady Tartakovsky's Primal.
Super fans, Jim.
Okay. Which is why I was pleased to share this info that the Blu-ray and the DVD of season one is finally coming out.
Yeah, June 1st with some special features. And you saw that Clone Wars is on Disney Plus today, right?
Yes. I'm still trying to kind of wrap my head around that, because at one point there was actually talk of showing those in theaters to sort of act as a bridging agent between Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith.
Yeah, they were going to show the last one of the second set before Attack of the Clones. What's weird is on Disney Plus, they've just grouped them like an hour-long chunks, so you could just watch the first group and the second group, which is kind of a bummer. You can't go individually. Because as you and I know, the Mace Windu episode is one you've got to go back to again and again. But yeah, it's better to have it than not, right? And also Ewoks.
Okay. Well, let's not go that far. I'm a diabetic. I can only watch so much Ewok. And better to have than not, we just lost a SpongeBob in the past week. Did you see this story about the quarantined crab episode? It has been pulled from the inventory, supposedly, because it's been deemed insensitive during the pandemic.
Oh, no. I saw that they pulled the panty raid episode, which...
Oh. Okay.
Is the home of many, many SpongeBob memes, which I thought was kind of funny.
Okay.
No, I didn't hear about this.
Yeah. This is the episode where the health inspector finds a case of clam flu has broken out at the Krusty Krab. And so all the patrons are then quarantined in the restaurant and hilarity ensues. And evidently not so funny anymore. So it'll be interesting to see if this one gets folded back into the inventory when COVID is way in the rearview mirror. But while we're looking in the rearview mirror, for the past, I want to say, 4 or 5 weeks, Len Test and I over in the Disney Dish podcast have been doing the history of the Twilight Zone Tower of Terror. And on one of the recent episodes, we talked about how there was this period of time where the Imagineers were toying with having Vincent Price be the host of the attraction. And this was during a period when the storyline was about a silent film director who went mad, and he's the one who cuts the cable on the elevator and makes it fall. They envisioned Price as the voice. And Drew reached out almost as soon as we finished the episode, and it's like, why don't you talk about what you reminded me of, which I'm kind of embarrassed I didn't mention as part of the show.
No, well, first of all, this series is wonderful, and it's, you know, it's hugely helpful to me because I'm working on something in that period. So to be reminded of the ambitious plans for the Euro Disney project and everything else. But you brought up the fact that he narrated the Phantom Manor in Paris, and I said, Jim, what do you forgot? He was in Disney MGM Studios already because he was narrating The Sorcery in the Sky, Nighttime Spectacular, which was really a fun show, I thought.
Honestly, for the longest time, it was my favorite Nighttime Spectacular in Florida. Yeah, but largely because, again, it was staged on top of and around and above the Chinese Theater. And yes, Vincent's voice was one of the things that really made the thing sing. A lot of people don't recall that when Vincent passed in, I want to say, September of 93, thereabouts, they discontinued using his voice. They went with a more generic voice. But what I love about Drew is he's tenacious. So you started hammering on Vincent Price and Disney and came across this weird little interstitial thing that had been on the Disney Channel. Do you want to talk about that?
Well, what's really sad, Jim, is that I wasn't even looking for this. I have been just watching Disney Channel interstitial material because I really love that period when it was a pay channel. And there are some great collections of, like, the Free Weekends, you know, where they have a woman at a computer and a phone. Mm-hmm. And I'm here to take your subscription call or whatever. So anyway, what part of this was a segment called Read, Write, and Draw, which was a very charming kind of little short thing with Vincent Price kind of teaching kids how to read, write, and draw. And it's really, really cute. Also kind of weird. So you had some information about how he kind of came to Disney, right?
For the first 20 years, he was in Hollywood from 38 to 58. He's a contract player. He's in dramas. He's in comedies. It's only in 1958 when he does The Fly that he kind of finds his new niche. He becomes a horror guy. He's so unfamiliar with doing horror at this point. Do you remember The Fly at all? With the whole David Hedison.
Yeah, of course.
Help me! Help me! There's the end scene where it's Vincent Price and Herbert Marshall, and I think they're outside in a park on a bench. And the thing is, they're both sort of staring straight into the camera as they do their final scene. And it turns out there's a reason it was staged that way, that he initially staged the scene and they couldn't get through it without breaking up laughing because it's like, oh, God, this movie is so dumb, you know, and I'm glad I'm getting paid, but this movie is terrible. And eventually he's like, all right, the only way we're going to get through this scene is if we, you know, you both are staring straight ahead. And then, of course, the movie turns out to be this massive hit and is like two sequels and then the Jeff Goldblum reboot with Gina Davis in the 80s. So Price becomes this horror guy in the 60s. And this is when young Tim Burton, who was born in 58, falls in love with Vincent Price. You know the story, Drew, but you know how he ends up at Disney and coming out of CalArts and is the quote-unquote weird guy. And one day, Burton comes to Tom Wilhite, the then head of Walt Disney Studios, with this idea. He's written a poem called Vincent, which again is about Vincent Molloy, the little boy who thinks he's Vincent Price. And Burton wants to do this as a stop-motion film. But Wilhite is looking at it and saying, well, it's charming, it's fun, but I don't want to get sued by Vincent Price. So the only way this thing is going to happen is if Vincent Price signs off on it. So Tom Wilhite arranges for the manuscript to be sent to Vincent Price. And literally, it's like Vincent Price is holding Tim Burton's career in his hands. If he says no, this film doesn't go forward. And if this film doesn't go forward, think about it. We don't get Frankenweenie. We don't get Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
Batman.
There you go. I mean, but to his credit, Vincent Price is both charmed and flattered. You know, it's like, you know, oh my God, a kid at Disney wants to make a movie about me. Sure, go ahead. You know, and yes, I'll come in and narrate it. Wilhite gives him basically no money. As I understand it, it's Rick Heinrich. Is that the gentleman who?
Yeah, I think he's credited as he might be a co-director on that one or something. Like he was very involved in Vincent for sure.
As you're drilling down into your Disney Channel stuff, there's that Disney Channel showcase. That's the one where you get to see the work in progress of the early, early Roger Rabbit.
Yes. Yeah.
And at one point, don't they stop in and spend time with Tim and Rick? And I think they show some of Vincent while they're doing that, but aren't they working on that Hansel and Gretel done as Kabuki theater thing for the Disney Channel?
Yeah, the thing that was aired one time.
There we go. That's it exactly. Like, I love that. You know, again, a small group of truly crazy Tim Burton fans. It's like, yeah,
we know.
Yeah, well, in fact, that was half the reason I went to the MoMA. Didn't they run chunks of that on one of the monitors in there? Or
they did, and they also ran. Speaking of stop motion, they ran the stop motion test for Mars Attacks.
All the Martians were going to be stop motion. That's right. Yeah. Well, anyway, you got to start somewhere. And in the case of Tim Burton, it's Vincent. And Disney gives Tim and Rick $60,000. And they have to get the whole film done for $60,000. And they have to have it done in just 2 months' time so it can be out in theaters in October of 82. And Vincent Price, you come to the Disney lot and records. And so who notices that Vincent Price is on the lot but Ron Clements? This is during the period where Ron is working on The Black Cauldron. He's the one who recognizes that this film is a combination of two greats, you know, the Titanic and the Hindenburg, you know, and he wants off. He wants some other project. This film's going to die, and it's going to take Disney Animation with it. So he goes to Ron Miller and convinces him. I guess they'd already licensed the film rights to the Basil of Baker Street book series. And Miller's like, okay, sure, go develop that as the follow-up to Black Cauldron. Supposedly, Ron sees Price on the lot coming and going to work on Vincent. And it's like, ooh, he might be an interesting guy for Professor Radigan. And sure enough, that's what ends up happening. Now, mind you, again, you were talking about how Tim and Rick only got $60,000 to make Vincent. The story that Ron Clements tells was that, you know, when he was, what, pitching Eisner about making Basil of Baker Street, it's like, well, we're going to need 3.5 years and we need $24 million and we can have this ready for Christmas of 87. And what was Eisner's response? You get half the time and half the money, you know, and this needs to be in theaters by July of 86. So the fact that that movie is as good as it is under those conditions is amazing. But yeah, he comes and records all the stuff for Professor Radigan in 84, 85. And it's then the Disney Channel people literally say, hey, what's Vincent Price doing on the lot? And is he available? Are we working with him now? And this is where your read, write, and draw thing comes from.
Right.
Now he's in the mix at Disney, which brings us to Phantom Manor. And same thing. The Imagineers are like, wow, Vincent Price works at Disney now. We should get him for our new Haunted Mansion. And there's this wonderful story of him recording the dialogue for Phantom Manor in the spring of 1990. And the thing is that, you know, they spent 3.5 hours with him working phonetically on the French pronunciation of the script. And I guess it did not work out.
He was replaced, right? Wasn't it?
Well, yeah, ultimately they wound up with two different voices. On the other hand, when he went to do the English version, he knocked it out in two takes and everybody loved it. But as you mentioned, the attraction opens in April of 1992. You know, at this point, it's just deemed that, all right, maybe that doesn't work. And I guess after about 3 or 4 months, they pull Vincent's voice work out of it. When they redid the Phantom Manor for 2019, it brought back his voice work. And now it's a dual track attraction. You can get the French, you can get Vincent Price. Though we should probably also talk about Nightmare Before Christmas, because Tim Burton, back in 82, wanted, as his follow-up to doing Vincent, the stop-motion thing, wanted to do Nightmare. Only this was the holiday special version, you know, the half-hour-long one that they were going to do. And his sale point to Disney is, well, look, if you look at How the Grinch Stole Christmas, you know, that's narrated by a great horror voice that's narrated by Boris Karloff, and we just worked with Vincent Price, we should bring him back. And for that management group at Disney, Nightmare was the bridge too far. You know, it was just sort of like, no. But when Disney finally did decide they wanted Burton back, and they were willing to do whatever they could, so they greenlit Nightmare with Henry Selick. At this point, Burton reaches out to Vincent Price and wants him to try out for the narrator. And I think at that point, they were also looking at James Earl Jones. They were also looking at Don Ameche. But at this point, Vincent, he's got emphysema. He's got Parkinson. I mean, what's fascinating to me is in the spring of 1990, here he is doing the Phantom Manor stuff. And they bring him in the fall to do the voice work or tryout for Nightmare. And his voice is starting to fall apart at this point. And so they default, Burton still wants him to be a part of it. So they have him record the first voice for Santa in Nightmare. I guess in the end, it was Henry Selick who made the call. He's listening to the tracks and it's like, this is a sad, old, weak Santa Claus. I don't know. Is that's a guy who could stand up to Oogie Boogie?
Right.
So they pull the tracks and, you know, they're somewhere in the Disney vaults next to the Phil Harris stuff for Tailspin, I guess. But that same year is when Burton is also shooting Edward Scissorhands. This is when they kind of got the inkling that, you know, maybe we have to be a little more careful with Vincent, because I guess the inventor initially had a much bigger part in the movie, but they shot his scenes last. I guess they shot all the stuff in Tampa with the neighborhood and all that early on, and then they shot the remaining stuff back in Burbank so Vincent could just come in for the day. And they just found out when they got him on the set, he's in rough shape, and they had to really collapse the part in a bit. I mean, he's still very, very effective in the film. Which brings us to your story, Drew, because you reminded me that for years now, there's been a story about what arguably, I guess, would be Burton's last collaboration with Vincent Price.
Yeah, I mean, when Vincent Price died, Burton was making a feature-length documentary about their relationship, which maybe would have been distributed by Disney. Obviously, Ed Wood opened in 1993, and the relationship between Ed Wood and Bela Lugosi is very much based on the Tim Burton Vincent Price relationship.
I did not know.
I think that he was.
Oh wow!
Yeah. Oh yeah. So, and that was released by Disney by Touchstone. So
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Even though he didn't get his documentary out, I think that little bit of remove where he, you know, it wasn't so sort of nakedly emotional and autobiographical.
Mm-hmm.
He put all that into Ed Wood, which I would argue maybe is Tim Burton's greatest film. So, I mean, he still kind of worked through those things in a different way. But
wow.
I would still love to see what the footage from his documentary looked like. I hope someday he decides to splice it together, you know?
No, definitely. Especially in this subscription streaming service world where something like that could do quite well in the festival circuit, you know, if there were still a festival circuit. I think something like this, that there'd be an audience out there that would embrace that right off the bat. Two quick stories before we close out here, because I was living in Florida at the time that Edward Scissorhands was being shot. And there are these two very weird Disney ties to the movie. You remember the neighborhood when Edward, you know, comes down off the mountain and is brought home by the mom selling Avon, and you get the tour of the really ugly neighborhood. This is a real neighborhood, a subdivision outside of Tampa. And Burton knew that the homeowners were not going to be happy when he saw what he was going to do to their houses, you know, paint them really ugly colors and make the windows smaller and all that. So he wanted them as far away as possible. So when they signed you to be, you know, your house in Edward Scissorhands, it's like, oh, by the way, as a thank you, how would you and your family like to go to Walt Disney World? We'll put you up in a hotel over there. You're going to be, you know, 90 miles away, so you can't drive home and check what we're doing to your house. So, you know, those families all stayed at Walt Disney World for a couple of weeks while Edward Scissorhands was being shot. Conversely, though, a friend of mine who worked at the Adventurers Club, Andy Clark, He was the original Graves, the butler, but he got hired to actually be in the cast of Edward Scissorhands, and just, you know, would describe it as this very, very surreal experience. But he has one line in the movie where I think at one point a backyard party, he goes up to Edward and it's like, you know, I know a doctor who could maybe help you out with those hands. And during the years when he was working at the Adventurers Club, he always knew he was dealing with a Tim Burton fan when people would walk up to him and, you know, he'd be holding the tray as Graves the butler and they'd go, I know a doctor who can help you out with those hands.
It's great. It's a great line reading, I got to say.
Yeah, it is. It is. But thank you, Drew, for bringing up the Vincent Price thing. Because, and again, I'm just embarrassed that I forgot about Sorcery in the Sky because it was so much fun. And you were pointing out that there was that 5 minute long window of time where, as part of it, they did that Rocketeer tribute.
Yeah, with a guy in a real rocket pack, like the kind you'd see at like a, you know, Mike Tyson boxing match or something. But what was interesting was that the Rocketeer moment in that Nighttime Spectacular was based off of a deleted scene in the movie.
That's right.
Was the Rocketeer saving somebody who falls off the marquee of the Chinese theater, which is also why there are blast prints. I'm not sure if they're still there, but in the wet cement, there's a blast print from the Rocketeer as his signature outside the theater.
I have a copy of that draft of the screenplay. And in fact, the way that scene ends, I forget which starlet is supposed to be stepping into the wet cement. But you're right that it's a premiere at the Chinese theater. And there's somebody up on the wall of the theater with a spotlight who turns into the Rocketeer and loses their footing and falls to the ground. The Rocketeer saves him at the last minute. But as he's saving the guy, his feet get planted in the cement. And then he blasts off, and Sid Grauman, they actually have an actor playing Sid Grauman, immediately leans over and signs in the concrete, the Rocketeer. And you see this starlet get really upset because it's like, that's supposed to be my cement. And it's like, no, it's the Rocketeer cement. But now I'm going to have to go back and look for those blast prints.
Yeah, I ordered the paperback of the novelization, so hopefully that will shed some light. I will look into that, and hopefully it'll be here by the time we record next. So,
okay, yeah. Cool. And while you're waiting for our next recording, this isn't the only podcast Drew does. There's that wonderful trio of shows that you do, Light the Fuse, Light the Wick, and Light the Fuselage. So what's going on with those right now?
We're still chugging along. We got a lot of great episodes. We've got some episodes with the guys that did the titles for John Wick, and they also did some subtitles for Ghost Protocol when Tom Cruise is figuring out how to speak English or what the translation is from Russian to English. And the subtitles kind of change on the screen from Cyrillic to English. So they did that. So we got an episode of Light the Wick and an episode of Light the Fuse out of these great guys from Filmograph, and a lot of big surprises for later this summer. I want to kind of keep it under wraps for now, but we've got some great shows coming up. So if you're at all interested in Mission Impossible, John Wick, or a certain aviation-themed Tom Cruise franchise, which shall remain nameless, check it out.
Can't wait. Okay, well, we also have a few podcasts over here. I mean, we mentioned earlier Disney Dish with Len Testa. Likewise, Universal Joint with Dustin Fuse. On Monday, Aaron and I will be recording a brand new Marvel Us Disney. Tell you what, folks, if you could do Drew and I a favor, if you could head over to Apple Podcasts and rate and review not only the podcast you're listening to right now, Fine Tuning, but likewise Light the Fuse, Light the Wick, and Light the Fuselage. That would be very helpful. If you get over to Bandcamp and subscribe, that would help. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram as Jim Hill Media and on Facebook at Jim Hill Media News. Thanks for listening, folks, and we will be back soon.